So yesterday, the President of the United States and the former Vice President of the United States both gave speeches about closing Guantanamo, moving the detainees to prisons here in the United States, and on and on and on. I want to play you a couple of pieces of audio from each of them, and then we'll talk to a journalist who has looked into the claims by at least one of them. Here is President Obama yesterday on not releasing terrorists into the American homeland. Roll it.
We are not going to release anyone if it would endanger our national security. Nor will we release detainees within the United States who endanger the American people. Where demanded by justice and national security, we will seek to transfer some detainees to the same type of facilities in which we hold all manner of dangerous and violent criminals within our borders, namely highly secure prisons that ensure the public safety.
Obama, in a speech yesterday at the National Archives in Washington, D.C., he went on to talk about Americans not wanting posturing on these issues, but someone who's actually going to do things.
You can almost picture the direct mail pieces that emerge from many vote on this issue, designed to frighten the population. I get it. But if we continue to make decisions within a climate of fear, we will make more mistakes. And if we refuse to deal with these issues today, then I guarantee you that they will be an albatross around our efforts to combat terrorism in the future. I have confidence that the American people are more interested in doing what is right to protect this country than in political posturing.
Now, while the president was referring to Republicans who he thinks are doing political posturing, in his speech later on, former Vice President Dick Cheney turn the tables on him. Let me have cut number six, please, Aaron. Roll it.
Critics of our policies are given to lecturing on the theme of being consistent with American values, but no moral value held dear by the American people obliges public servants to sacrifice innocent lives to spare a captured terrorist from unpleasant things. And when an entire population is targeted by a terror network, nothing is more consistent with American values than to stop them.
Now, let me have the one just before that of Cheney continuing that same kind of theme on finding a middle ground on terror.
The administration seems to pride itself on searching for some kind of middle ground in policies addressing terrorism. They may take comfort in hearing disagreement from opposite ends of the spectrum. If liberals are unhappy about some decisions and conservatives are unhappy about other decisions, then it may seem to them that the president is on the path of sensible compromise. But in the fight against terrorism, there is no middle ground. And half measures keep you half exposed. You cannot keep just some nuclear-armed terrorist out of the United States. You must keep every nuclear-armed terrorist out of the United States. Triangulation is a political strategy, not a national security strategy. When just a single clue that goes unlearned or one lead that goes unpursued can bring on catastrophe, it's no time for splitting differences. There is never a good time to compromise when the lives and safety of the American people hang in the balance.
Now, of course, that is the typical kind of Cheney nonsense that we've come to hear so much over the last couple of years, because he only sees extremes, and anybody who disagrees with him wants to mollify the enemy and let them in and let them blow us up. John Walcott is going to join us now. Here is he's the Washington Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers. He and his crew did a very good analysis of what Cheney had to say in his speech yesterday. John, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Pleasure to be with you.
You found in the former vice president's speech, I don't want to call them lies, let's call them some misstatements, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair word.
In those misstatements, what did he get wrong?
Oh, he got any number of things wrong. Where to begin? First of all, there is the notion that we had to apply extreme interrogation methods, including waterboarding, which is almost universally considered a form of torture, even by John McCain, because we couldn't get good information any other way. The truth is we got a good deal of good information without torturing people, and we got a good deal of bad information, including the bogus reports about ties between Iraq and Saddam Hussein's Iraq and al-Qaeda,
mm-hmm.
when people were tortured. So that's, you know, that's one big one right there.
Yeah. One thing that Cheney didn't mention yesterday was the recent testimony by Ali Soufan, who was an FBI special agent who I think was one of the guys who actually interrogated Abu Zubaydah, one of these top al-Qaeda guys, and didn't he say to the Congress, look, we got a lot of information out of this guy without having to beat him up?
Yes, that's exactly what he said, and he has some experience as an interrogator. And other interrogators will tell you the same thing. Torture, people will say anything to make torture stop, to make even unpleasant treatment short of waterboarding stop. And we had some experience with that in the Korean War, when some of our POWs, including an uncle of mine, were treated harshly by the North Koreans and said things that weren't true. And none of them was at least my uncle, was not subjected to waterboarding, merely isolation, other harsh treatment. And so we know it doesn't produce good information.
Well, what about these claims by Obama that what the Bush administration did in setting up Guantanamo and other things that they have done have increased the ranks of al-Qaeda worldwide? Cheney rejects that, saying that makes it look like we're the bad guys, right?
Cheney rejects that, and again, he's wrong. Tom Lasseter, a very, very fine reporter of ours, did an extensive investigative report last year on exactly who the detainees were. We published it last June, and among other things, there's the third part of that series that Tom wrote is called School for Jihad, and that is exactly what Guantanamo became. There were a number of people, probably the vast majority, swept up there, who had nothing to do with terrorism when they were detained. They were turned in for cash bounties. They were turned in because of political rivalries, even personal jealousies in Afghanistan or Pakistan. And they were radicalized while they were in prison, probably in part because of the treatment they received in prison. And Tom documented that quite well. So I'm afraid when you look at the record and you look at the number of people who have been released from Guantanamo, that's a de facto admission that they didn't belong there in the first place anyway. I think you're going to find that the record is that we have probably, with our detention and interrogation policies, created more terrorists than we've eliminated.
Now, speaking of the guys who were released from Guantanamo, you know, people who hear about this might think, oh, well, you know, Obama let these bad guys go. But in fact, of the hundreds of detainees who were swept up during the Bush years, more than half of them have been let go, hundreds of them. Many of them have gone back to their own countries. And there was a report this week on, let's call it, the recidivism of some of these guys. The Pentagon supposedly says 1 in 7 of them have rejoined the fight, either with al-Qaeda or other groups, to fight against the United States. How much do we believe that?
Well, even the people who wrote that, the New York Times, have backed away from it. Rather quickly, there's a familiar ring to that story. It showed up on the New York Times website. 1 out of 7 had returned to the fight. Then was cited by Vice President Cheney the following day in his speech.
Mm-hmm.
That repeats a pattern we saw during the run-up to the Iraq War, when stories would appear on the front page of the New York Times about ties between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and then be repeated in speeches by the vice president within a day or two, or in appearances on national television within a day or two. So, you know, we've heard this song before. And the recidivism story, you know, as it was published, failed to answer two questions. Number one, obviously, the credibility of those statistics. Where do they come from? But number two, the matter I referred to earlier. How many of the people who have returned in some form to the battlefield were terrorists when they got to Guantanamo, versus how many were radicalized in prison? Those accounts in that report apparently never touched on that subject.
Not to mention the fact that when they did go back home, and talk to their countrymen or their friends or just people in their villages, if they talked about harsh treatment that they endured at the hands of the Americans at Guantanamo Bay before, by the way, being released without being prosecuted for anything, what kind of message did that send to their friends and neighbors back home?
Well, it sent a couple of messages, and in the culture of many, many places in the Middle East in particular, the family then has an obligation to address that injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And some family members, indeed, may have decided to take matters into their own hands and throw in with the radical factions as a way of paying us back for what they consider the unjust treatment of their relatives.
John, I want to play you one more piece of audio from Dick Cheney yesterday. Aaron, this is going to be number four, where they talk about the release of the torture memos. Roll it, please.
Our successors in office have their own view on these matters. By presidential decision last month, we saw the selective release of documents relating to enhanced interrogations. This is held up as a bold exercise in open government, honoring the public's right to know. We're informed as well that there was much agonizing over this decision. Yet somehow, when the soul searching was done and the veil was lifted on the policies of the Bush administration, the public was given less than half the truth. The released memos were carefully redacted to leave out references to what our government learned through the methods in question. Other memos laying out specific terrorist plots that were averted apparently were not even considered for release. For reasons the administration has yet to explain, they believe the public has a right to know the method of the questions, but not the content of the answers.
Now, John, this is my favorite moment of irony so far in 2009. Dick Cheney claiming our government is not being open enough.
Yeah, that's enough to make you think twice. What he said was nonsense. There's no other way to put it. The Obama administration did not make a decision after great soul searching. That's all very colorful. It's good political rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is, it was the CIA that announced that the documents he's talking about could not be released. And why did they do so? Why did they announce that? They did so because they were obliged to by a 2003 executive order that prohibits the release of those materials because they're subject to lawsuits. And who signed that executive order? Well, that would be George W. Bush.
Yeah. Do you think that if the United States does suffer another major attack, I probably should use the word when, but I'm going to be an optimist and use the word if instead. If we do suffer another 9/11-like attack, that all of it will fall upon Barack Obama if he is still president when it happens, especially if any of these guys who have been released, even those released by the Bush administration, are found to be even partly responsible for it?
I will say this. I think that the former vice president has done a masterful job of framing this issue so that the blame will fall on President Obama.
It's essentially, we protected you and he's not.
Yeah, now we being the ones who ignored the memo that said bin Laden determined to strike in U.S.,
yeah.
We being the ones who were in charge on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
We being the ones who created a detention system that has probably radicalized more people than it's taken off the streets. And finally, we being the ones who took our eyes off the ball in Afghanistan and Pakistan, turned our attention to getting ready to invade Iraq before we had finished the job against the people who did 9/11. But despite all of that, I think with the kind of rhetoric you heard from the vice president yesterday, very skillful political rhetoric, however wanting it may be in truthfulness, I think he has largely succeeded in laying whatever happens next at the doorstep of President Obama.
Yeah. You know, if he and President Bush want to take credit for keeping this country safe for 7 years, then I want to hear them give credit to President Clinton for keeping us safe between the World Trade Center bombing of 1993 and the World Trade Center attack of 2001. I've never heard them utter a syllable in that regard. Have you?
No, nor do I expect to. and I wouldn't stay up late waiting to hear that.
Nor would I. John, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
John Walcott is the Washington Bureau Chief for McClatchy Newspapers. They've done terrific investigative work on all of this. And in a piece out today, that he edited and which was written by Jonathan Landay and Warren Strobel of his staff. They absolutely dissect the omissions and misstatements of Vice President Dick Cheney's speech yesterday at the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. We'll come back and include some of your phone calls at 888-973-CAIRO.